Welcome to the France 24 debate. I'm Mark Owen. The last chance saloon for the planet. The words of Prince Charles of the UK as COP26 gets into full swing in Scotland. Tonight we're discussing the stakes for us all as the world leaders go head to head, toe to toe, over the future of the planet. Let's hear now from the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres.
As we open this much anticipated climate conference, we are still having for climate disaster. Young people know it. Every country sees it. Small island developing states and other vulnerable ones live it. And for them, failure is not an option. Failure is a death sentence. G20 countries have a particular responsibility as they represent around 80% of emissions. But emerging economies too must go the extra mile, as their contribution is essential for the effective reduction of emissions.
Mr. Guterres is the Secretary General of the UN, not me. I might get it next, who knows. Climate change then, the ticking doomsday device, says the summit host and UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Who has the political will and courage to effect the kind of change the experts say is urgently needed to save our planet? Our guests who will be discussing this here in the studio, Fabio D'Andrea, who's from the CNRS, senior researcher there, a deputy director of the Dynamic Meteorology Laboratory. I got there in the end. Thank you very much indeed. At the Ecole Normale Supérieure. Great to see you, sir. On the other side of our studio, Anna Creti, Professor of Economics, Director of the Climate Economics Chair at Paris-Dauphine University. Thank you. And also next to her, Olga Givenet, Member of the French Parliament for the La République En Marche Party. Great to see you. Joining us by Skype, it says from Glasgow, but I suspect she's in Brighton, Bella Lack, Environmentalist, Youth Ambassador for the Born Free Foundation. Just confirming, Bella, you are in Brighton, yes?
I'm in Brighton. I'll be in Glasgow later this week,
excellent.
But Brighton now.
Brighton, which has a green MP, Sussex by the Sea. Great to see you. Before I let the guests loose, let's get an update from Scotland, where our environmental reporter, Valerie de Kimp, is covering COP26 for us. Valerie, tell us, set the scene where you are for us.
Well, there certainly is a heightened sense of urgency here in Glasgow, and there is a real risk that COP26 could fail. And we have heard that warning from Boris Johnson, the host of this year's summit, saying that there is a real risk that COP26 can fail. And if Glasgow fails, the entire system fails, the whole thing fails. We've also heard a warning from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres saying that COP26 will be a make or break moment for the Paris Agreement. Now, you might remember 6 years ago in 2015 when countries gathered to sign the Paris Agreement, they agreed to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. They agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but they also agreed to come back 5 years later with more ambitious plans and to step up their ambition. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, that didn't happen last year. COP26 is the time to do that, and so it will be the major first test for this ratchet mechanism of the Paris Agreement. So this will be a key point of the negotiations, and it will decide whether COP26 is a success or not. And that's why a lot of people have been saying that if the Paris Agreement was the engagement party, well, now COP26 is the wedding, and we're waiting to see if countries will honor their climate commitments. And so far, there's not a lot to celebrate. To be honest, we know that we need to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, but currently, with current policies, we're on track for a 3-degree temperature rise. We also know, and this is what scientists have been saying, the science is very clear, we need to cut CO2 emissions by 45% in the next 8 years, but we know that with current plans, emissions are actually on the rise, and we are heading towards a 16% increase. But I also think that it's important to keep things into perspective. And whether we are pessimistic or optimistic, one analyst was telling me, it all depends on how you see life. And I thought that is a really great way of seeing how things will evolve here at COP26. And I think perhaps, you know, the glass is fuller than we actually think. One analyst saying today we tend to think of all the negative things and how COP26 is not making enough progress. But where would we be today without the Paris Agreement? And I think countries, when they agreed to step up their climate plans, they also spurred more climate action. And essentially, we are better off today than we were 10 years ago. And I think that it's important to keep that in mind.
Indeed. You mentioned an engagement. You mentioned a wedding. It sounds like the divorce might be pending, even though you're being optimistic as well. Valerie, thank you very much indeed. Valerie Le Guimp at Glasgow for France 24. Let's bring in our guest to talk about this issue. And I'll bring in Belle at first from Brighton in England. So you feel welcome and ready to talk anytime, Belle, if you don't mind. How optimistic are you with COP26 starting now? Tell us what your thoughts are, Belle.
Well, my thoughts on Boris Johnson's statement is, you know, he said that we're strapped to a doomsday device, and he said that that doomsday device is climate change. And I would argue that the climate crisis is a symptom, and the real doomsday device is the political apathy and the cognitive dissonance. And right now he's saying that lots of the pledges are sounding hollow. And I think what sounds the most hollow to me is, you know, him saying that we need to ramp up ambition and that we need to ramp up action just a few weeks after approving the Cambo oil field, which is going to produce 170 million barrels of oil. So I think there's kind of this pandemic of politicians acting like parrots, where they're repeating what they think people want to hear rather than actually what they believe and what they're going to do. And so I would say, am I optimistic? I don't think it should be about optimism or pessimism. I think pessimism, I think it should be about realism, and we should get rid of this narrative of is going to be a success or not, because there's no binary in the climate crisis. There's just the fact that we're on this trajectory right now leading us to destruction, and what we have to do is ramp up action as much as we can and hopefully avert that. So I think instead of success and instead of optimism, we should look at progress, and we should try and be realistic about what we should do, and that is everything that we can right now.
I think Bella's right. You can't argue with statistics, can you? That's one of the things you can't argue with. And a pandemic of politicians acting like parrots. Olga, I've got to bring you in on that one, as you are the politician here.
I'm the politician, and I could say that everything is done, at least in France, to make it reduce the carbon emission, because, you know, we stopped the coal plant in France. They stopped. And we know that in 2040, we will not give authorization anymore for the hydrocarbon emission as well. So every country has to take its part. And this climate summit is the time to make the commitment, all the decision needed, that every country can take the effort and make sure that we go on the good path. And we can succeed. I think we can have a long-term view of what we want and what would be also the climate change to our population, see about immigration and everything. So we have to be all together and make sure that everyone's taking its part.
Indeed, there are so many aspects on this, aren't there? Because you mentioned about coal power and reducing that. You mentioned about, you know, migration or immigration. Often that is driven by climate change, isn't it? Fabio, can I ask you, you've got a glass in front of you. Is that glass half empty or half full? How do you feel?
About climate? Okay, I don't like this optimism, pessimism kind of thing. You know?
Okay.
I think Bella was very, very correct in her statement. Mm. And I don't like this idea that it's the last chance. I mean, we've been in the last chance since 40 years ago.
Sure.
And like from a scientist point of view, I mean, I see things happening now. I've been always very pessimistic myself, but things are bad, but things are happening and are happening at a certain pace. So let's make it faster.
Faster?
Yeah.
It needs to be. Obviously, it's not just about ordinary people, is it? It's about the organisations, it's about the governments.
No,
it's
obviously...
There's a lot of pressure on all of us to sort of make sure that we reduce, but...
This idea that the sum of individual behaviour will change the world, I don't really believe in that. Then, of course, we can debate whether the change of individual behaviour will change also the political standpoint. Anyway, but at this point, we don't have time for that. We need public policies.
Fabio from the Dynamic Meteorology Laboratory. Thank you very much indeed, sir. Anna, can I bring you in to talk about the same issue? I mean, Bell is saying that it's about action now and getting things done. And that's really what needs to happen, isn't it? I think we all agree on that.
Yes, but the point is that the meaning of action, ambition, and target, net zero target for 195 countries, is quite different. It's quite heterogeneous. So on one side, we have just reminded the effort of France to close the coal plants. But in France, we only have four coal plants. The same effort and the same ambition in a country which has its energy mix based on coal is different, and also the consequences in terms of social consequences will be different. So the point is that I would like to say that we do not need any longer statements, because if we stick to statements, then any country can have its own view. But let's talk about instruments. This is one of the key points of this the COP26, something that has been left apart as from now, that is the discussion on the Article 6, which means which policy instruments are going to be at least discussed and then agreed upon in order to make this process we all are waiting for.
I mean, that seems remarkably obvious and logical. I'm surprised it hasn't been...
No, the point is that the negotiation is difficult, because imagine that it is one of the possible issues, and not the simplest one. Imagine that the country has to agree on a carbon tax. Who is going to set it? From when? Which is the level? Is then going to be increasing in time? Is there a carbon club that has to be formed by the G20 first, and then the other countries reaching? So when it comes about money, nothing seems to be, yes, it is, well, bon sens. So it is something that makes sense, but when it comes to money, it is much more difficult.
Indeed. Ursula von der Leyen was saying that this carbon taxing system will be in place at some time soon. It's something clearly that needs to happen, isn't it?
Well, this is one of the major, if we have to talk it about, it is one of the major points that has been left in the COP21 to be decided afterwards. And it is part of the mechanism that has been set in Paris, that is, now there is this idea of common but differentiated responsibility. So this last five and then the pandemic year has been devoted to mainly make on one side the accounting, the precise accounting of the CO2 emissions or CO2 equivalent emissions. And then on the other side, now it is time to verify it and to measure it and to also make more nationally determined contribution tighter.
Indeed. Well, they say when it costs money, things will actually change. The biggest market, of course, is possibly the United States. Let's hear from Joe Biden, who is at COP26. Let's hear from the U.S. president.
The science is clear. We only have a brief window left before us to raise our ambitions and to raise to meet the task that's rapidly narrowing. We can keep the goal of limiting global warming to just 1.5 degrees Celsius within our reach if we come together. If we commit to doing our part of each of our nations with determination and with ambition, that's what COP26 is all about. Glasgow must be the kickoff of a decade of ambition.
And as we're listening to Joe Biden, it drops in front of me here on the wire service that the Democrat U.S. Senator Joe Manchin is saying that the infrastructure bill that Biden has touted, $1.75 trillion to be spent there with a major climate change angle on that, is hitting a hiccup because he needs to sort of be satisfied that it works. Oh, can I bring you in? This is the problem, and I think it's what Bella was talking about earlier on. There are things that need to be done, and then things that need to be done for political expediency, and that is often the stumbling block. I'm not getting at you. I'm raising it as generally as politicians. That is the stumbling block.
I understand, and as a politician, we are still trying to find a way to make people agree to the thing and have an action. For example, that we have some commercial exchange with other country, and we ask them to sign for the Paris Agreement. And when the country doesn't want to, then we don't sign the commercial agreement with them, because we think that they need to be at the same level as everyone. So the action that we're making is that getting all the country to the same standard. And I would say that Joe Biden is here at the COP26. He's a president of one of the country that polluting the most. The other one are not here, and he's here. So it's the time for discussion and make sure that everyone agree on this. And it can be about industry. It can talk about France and Europe. We know that we want the industry back. You know, the pandemic, we were missing some part to build, so we want the industry back. But we know if we have the industry back, then we will get some pollution as well. We will get some greenhouse gas effect as well. So how do we get all this expectation together? More industry, but also more green industry and no more pollution. And we have this ambition, and we know that every company wants to achieve this. So we have to work together. We have to make target also. We have to have deadline and make sure that we can reach the deadline.
Indeed, those targets are very important. We've mentioned the pandemic a few times, and certainly I can observe that during lockdown, first time round especially, the pollution levels around Paris completely reduced. The number of cars on the road. I'm not saying the pandemic's a good thing. Of course, it isn't a good thing. People have died and it's terrible. But for the planet, clearly, the lack of activity seemed to calm things a little bit, which obviously is a little bit. Not enough.
Yeah. That's an example of saying that if we stop everything, then it won't change the gas effect.
Sure.
So we must see that it would be a change anyway. So how we get some forecast?
I think you've neatly squashed my ignorant layman's interpretation. Thank you very much, Adina. I think I deserve that completely. Let's bring Bella back in from Brighton by the Sea there in the UK. Bella, I hope you can hear us and follow what we're saying. I don't know whether you heard what Joe Biden was saying. Biden, I think people might agree. You can tell me what you think. Better for the environment than Trump, but are you convinced by what he's saying?
So what Biden says is that we need to come together. I think I would say, you know, we have been coming together. And there's very much this cognitive dissonance I mentioned earlier, which is that it doesn't matter how much we come together as citizens, coming together in a broken system is never going to work. And right now, we live in a system where the dominant narrative is one of growth and consumption. And, you know, when we have infinite growth in the finite human body, we call that cancer. And yet when we have infinite growth on the finite, let's say, Earth body, they're calling that progress. And I think so instead of Joe Biden saying, OK, we need citizens to come together and rally together and take action. Yes, we do. But we actually need to change the whole system, because otherwise nothing is going to work. And I think that is primarily around, you know, complete economic transform. And that's an alternative has been proposed by Kate Raworth, which is the donut model of economics, which actually recognises that in nature nothing is linear, nothing can perpetually grow, and it recognises that we need to have some sense of circularity in our economy. And then, you know, we need to recognise as well the intersection between the environmental crisis and the social crisis. And I think, as I said earlier, this pandemic of parrots, I think that's exactly what we're seeing with Joe Biden's speech, which is very much these kind of tokenistic words: act now, come together, empower each other, you know, recognizing that young people are taking action. It's all, there are many niceties, and it's very nice to hear, it's empowering to hear to an extent, but it means absolutely nothing, and it's, to quote Boris Johnson, hollow.
Indeed. Bella there, seeing through the spin doctors, I think that's very clear to say. Fabio, can I bring you back in on this one? I mean, clearly, we're talking about sort of what can be done, can be banded together. You saying you're not sort of neither pessimistic nor optimistic. What needs to be done? What would you start with? You're in control. You've got the magic wand. Where would you start?
Okay, actually, you shouldn't ask a scientist for that. You know, our work, but I will answer anyway, because I have citizens' opinions, okay?
Okay.
But our work was done, like, way back. Mm. Things were there since the 90s, let's say. I mean, when the urgency was quite clear. So what to do now? I mean, you have to cut the emissions. There is no other things to be done. There is one thing that haven't been said that has also to do with bringing back industry in France or in other countries, the investment in infrastructure, and that's the part about transport. Actually, transport has been avoided in the Paris Agreement. They didn't take that into consideration. Probably it was too complicated. But of course, bringing back an industry in a country means that you don't transport it from somewhere else. And also, it involves coordination with other countries. So now people are very concentrated on reducing emissions in its own country, while maybe there should be a more international outlook.
So
I will start from that.
Things like globalization, would that be something you would reverse? There's the farming out of production to other countries. I'm thinking, you know, to and from China, to and from countries in the Far East.
Well, it depends what you call globalization. If transport is more expensive because it has externalities that makes it more expensive, then things will be produced more locally because they will be cheaper, right? There are things like that. It's not my specialty, it's more Anna's, but, you know, you can think of globalization like that as well.
Okay, making things locally.
It is one of the drivers of the change, and the point is at which pace we can go back to something local, and which is the objective. If we look back, why we had this side of the globalization with goods and services made on the other part of the world and then re-imported. One of the main drivers was the cost of labor. So now we should be able to do something on that. And I go back to which are the policy and the economic instruments that make it possible. If we have, again, something that is compounding the CO2 emissions and the someone who pays the externality, there is the possibility to have a budget from this payment of the CO2 emissions that can be reinvested in order to increase the productivity of workers. So this is clearly something that is easier to make at the local scale, at the national scale, than something that comes into an international agreement. It is too difficult to say who is going to import. So one of the solutions in order to avoid the this fallacy of understanding who has to re-import and what, it is one of the mechanisms that is proposed by the European Union, that is a border tax adjustment that takes into account the CO2 emission imported with the goods. So this is at least one of the solutions that we can take in the meantime that the structural transformation of the economy takes place.
So we're coming back to this idea of carbon trading again. It seems to be sort of like central to going forward on this. Is that what you're saying?
It's carbon trading and also carbon exchange across the frontiers, because in the Paris Agreement there is no mechanism that is internationally ratified. So we have local markets, the European one, also the Chinese one, which is going to be operational in a couple of months. We have the Canadian one, we have the Californian one, but all of these systems are not talking one to each other. So this idea of coordination comes perhaps first in harmonizing the different carbon markets that exist.
Thank you very much indeed. Let's hear now from Emmanuel Macron, who was speaking a little earlier. Let's get a bit of a French take on what's happening.
The key for the coming fortnight here at the COP26 is that the largest emitters that do not have a national strategy that matches that 1.5 degree goal, those big emitters need to strengthen their ambition in the next fortnight, in 14 days. That is the only way we can restore credibility in our strategy and achieve a strategy by 2030 that will make that target credible.
Let's bring Bella back in. Bella in Brighton there by the sea. Bella, I hope you heard what Emmanuel Macron was saying there, or at least our translation of it. Many people find Macron a far more intelligent politician. I'm wondering what your take on what you've heard might be.
I think one massive thing, just to sort of add to the discussion you were having before, one massive thing which we're overlooking is actually working with our biggest ally, which many and none of the politicians, including Macron, including Johnson and Biden, have mentioned, which is working with nature itself. And that could save us up to $248 billion a year globally. And right now, as in Macron's speech, you know, we're talking about implementing these new infrastructures, about carbon taxes, about these new systems. And I think it's very important, but we really need to also think about working with the planet itself and implementing nature-based solutions. And I think that's something which was mentioned, I think it was today or yesterday, by David Attenborough, and it's being mentioned on the fringe. But for some reason, and maybe this is something to bring up, you know, with your the other guests, why is that not being mentioned? Why are politicians not talking about working with nature? And I know that nature has a massive economic benefit, but I think another thing which we need to speak about, which none of the politicians are speaking about, is the intrinsic value of nature and sort of the narrative at the moment where humans are very much, we're seeing ourselves on top of this hierarchy of life. And this is kind of compounded by this COP26 meeting where we feel like we're saving the planet. And that's the narrative of humans saving the planet. We're not saving Earth at all. We're saving ourselves because Earth is going to be completely fine without us. And that's kind of the message I'm getting from all of these politicians, and something which I think we need to change, and they need to change as well.
Hear what you're saying completely, Bella. We've been spoiling the planet since 1790 when we were recording it as progress, of course. I studied history from that period and it was called progress, the Industrial Revolution, but of course it was the beginning of what we have right now. Bella, thank you for those observations. I'll put the one about Monsieur Macron to, well, he's your boss, isn't he?
Yes,
and obviously there are things being done to sort of give you, to get you out of jail on this one. There are things being done here, energy-wise in France, which are helping. I'm thinking of the use of wind power, for instance, that kind of research which is going on.
Yes, there's a lot of research going on the energy, because I think it's one of the big points, is how we get energy and we get a zero carbon energy for keep going and live. And when we talk about nature, obviously it's nature, because when we see forest fires, it's because of the drought and it's because of the heat waves as well. So everything is connected, and we agree on that. So when Emmanuel Macron says that the big emitters, they are the root cause of everything, and we are also in France and European as well. So we have to work on this. So the nature is definitely the objective. Make sure that we don't affect the planet and that we don't affect the future of our offsprings as well. So now, then, when we say who is the big emitter and how we make sure that they reduce it, it can be a taxation. But we need to discuss to make sure that everyone understands this process of taxation and accept it. Because if no one's accepted, then we keep going on and we don't agree all together. So if we do taxation on carbon, it's because every country accepts that he is part of the deal and have to reduce it. About the energy, when we see that coal power plant, like in Germany, are still going, and we know that the emission is really high, then we need our neighbor to understand that they have to make progress as well. In France, we decided to go on the nuclear. We have a big expertise on this. We know that we need electricity, and we agree as well that we will need more energy in the future. Because of the industry, we mention it, because of the transport. And again, when we talk about transport, is actually what about the energy that we want to bring in our cars or in our train, so we carry on. And after that, the way we produce as well can do emissions. So everything has to be put on the table.
Indeed. As you're saying all that, Olga, I'm feeling guilty because I've driven to work in a diesel car, because I have a diesel car still, sadly. And I've done that because if I commute by public transport, it adds another 2.5-3 hours to my working day, which, you know, I mean, bully for me and boo-hoo, and, you know, I should just suck it up and get on with it. But when you've got to add another 3 hours to your working day because of the transport scenario, I made the wrong decision and I apologise for that. Can I bring you back in, please, sir, to talk about this issue about France and whether France is doing the right thing? Is France, do you think, working with nature, as Bella was talking about? Do you think that's happening in France?
The keeping nature?
Is France working with nature, do you think? Are you getting a sense
of that? I don't know. I should ask the economists, but I think that nobody knows the price of the things we are destroying now. Even economists, when they're trying to build this damage functions where they try to put money, I mean numbers in the money that the damage created by climate change. I mean, nobody really knows that. But without going too much in detail, that's way above any investment that you can do now. And as soon as you do it, it will turn out, better in the future. If you think that most of the science was, most of the science that is now used. Now, things are getting much more clear for us. We can explain better what's going to happen in the future and what is happening now. But the mean temperature increase was already known. And do you realize the time we have wasted? Like all the technological changes, all the legal changes that could have been done since 20 years, and we shouldn't be here now? It's kind of sad. I mean, it's even sadder if you think that in history... big changes, big historical changes has been brought about by crisis. And, no need to make examples. You know, there are plenty of tragic examples in the history of humanity. So I hope that these crises, as described by the catastrophes that we have seen already, will be enough to motivate. And we don't have to wait for worse.
There's been some good news from Narendra Modi, which we'll talk about in a moment. Anna, do you have a reflection on that?
I think a couple of remarks. One of the objectives of this COP is exactly to agree on a meaning of what it is biodiversity, something that has, again, was neglected so far. And it is coming to the scene as a new name for this capital that is nature. And it is true that it is much more difficult to measure it. CO2 emissions are something that more or less, depending on whether they are static, like the emission for energy, or dynamic, like the emission for transport, we can measure. The value of biodiversity is much more approximative. Nevertheless, if we put a name on it, it will be really something that is a new start. And this is completely new. It is something that is worthwhile to stress for this COP26. Another point is another expected result of the COP26 is this issue of bringing in the different parties. And again, a new emphasis must be given to the name of just transition and all the efforts that has to be done in order to compensate. Because if we want to give a price to the CO2 emissions, a value to the biodiversity, then it means that there will be some losers. And one of the main issues is how to transfer and how to the wealth from the rich countries, because, I mean, this problem of CO2 emission is a problem of four rich countries, to the ones that would like to still continue developing. Again, something that makes sense, but has not been solved yet. The fund that was provided 100 million per year, it has been voted in the COP29, it was in 2009 in Copenhagen, and still the equation is not met. So, again, the economy says it's all about money.
Everything's about money. Because if there were differences and people had morals or any kind of insight into what happened with nature, would they be dealing as much with China? Would they put more pressure on China? It's all about money with China, isn't it? China has the resources. China has all the minerals that people need to create things. It's all about money, isn't it? Everything's about money.
It's how we agree to spend the money. Because, okay. I mean, it's... Xi Jinping remains in China. Maybe he has the fear to have COVID again. But
let's hope he doesn't get it.
No, of course, and for all of us.
Indeed.
China is not the country that has to be deemed as the sources of all the problems. We are responsible as much as China is, as much as the US is.
Hear what you're saying. Can I just bring it about to India? Narendra Modi has revealed at the COP26 that they're aiming to get to zero emissions by 2070, which is slightly beyond the 2050 deadline, but that's what he said. Boris Johnson has said that he's offered the UK support as India transitions away from coal to renewable energies. So it's two questions. Is India doing enough? But also, are we, the richer countries, doing enough in sharing that kind of technology, sharing that kind of know-how and insight to help countries like India, developing countries, transition? I'm thinking, you know, Brazil, India, you know, Russia to an extent, South Africa. Are we doing enough to help them?
Well, the technologies that must be used in order to substitute in the first instance, coal, are quite well known. So we talk about renewables, but the point is that the deployment of these renewables is not going fast enough. So the technology transfer is, I imagine, that it could be just to remove some barriers in order to deploy faster renewables and solar or photovoltaic or wind or something else. But then the question is which is the meaning of helping India, apart from the fact that they are in the Commonwealth and maybe there could be some side agreements in terms of trade. So the question is, I don't want this to be, yes, we are in the same arena and then we are going to help. I would like to know how it's going to help.
Indeed, that's probably what everyone's asking, the same kind of question. How is that help going to be delivered? Bella, can I bring you back in for possibly a last comment from you, I'm afraid. When you hear about Narendra Modi saying zero emissions by 2070, what's your initial reaction? How do you feel about that?
My initial reaction is that it's terrifyingly poor, that statement, and it's just simply not enough. But then I think, on the other side of that, it obviously, as you were speaking about, it requires help. And of course, developed countries aren't doing enough because this idea of climate finance of $100 billion a year is the bare minimum, and yet we can't even reach that. And so, yes, there's the idea of transitioning ourselves and also helping out developing countries. So I think... it's not my place to lay the blame on the Indian government for not doing enough when, you know, I live in the UK, which is sort of the hub of industrialization, a country which industrialized before others, has all the benefits of that. So there's that big moral conundrum of sort of a just transition, which needs to be spoken about a lot more. And I think actually is one of the main points which will be discussed at COP26. And hopefully we'll come out of it with the nature-based solutions I talked about before and the solutions to a just transition. And I think, you know, there is a lot of hope as well. You were talking about the flows of money. And I think we can see how, for example, in Costa Rica, they diverted the flow of money away from an army. They abolished their army and they put it completely into reforestation, into sustainability, and are now one of the most sustainable countries in the world. And simultaneously, there's been a correlation of increased happiness. And I think just on an ending note, you know, it's a terrifying time and the COP26, everyone's sort of on the edge of their seat with bated breath. And I think we need to recognize that this isn't all just about sacrifices. This is an incredible opportunity for humanity to create a much more sustainable world, a much more ethical world. And it's been shown in studies everywhere that, you know, when communities are strengthened, when people live in areas which are cleaner, which are more sustainable, then they're much happier. And I think we can look forward to creating that future. And it's not just about sacrifice.
Bella, I'm looking forward to what you've got to say when you go to Glasgow. Thank you very much indeed for your very well-reasoned and well-thought-out contributions. And I urge you to take a look at our reporter's documentary about Costa Rica, which is currently going out right now. You can catch it via our website, france24.com. Olga, can I bring you in? I sense you were itching to say something.
Yeah, I when we say about emission and get this to 0.2 by 2070, I think that the thing is actually when do they get to the balanced point? I mean, when they stop making more emission and they try to reverse the process. And I think today with COP26 is actually how fast we can get to the balance point and we can reverse, because otherwise they can still say 2070 or 2060. Then how we are sure that they actually have the right tools to do it? Where if we decide now that we don't make more emission than you do and you start to reverse, it shows that you are putting some effort on it. And that is a problem I've got with India or with China as well, who said we keep growing, we keep the growth, and we tell you later that we're going to do the zero emission later on. But by this time, we will have some more climate change, we will have some more difficulties with weather, dramatic events, and I think there's a country who should take their part don't show us right now that they can do it.
Indeed, we haven't even touched on Africa in this debate, which of course is possibly the main victim of climate change. I just got back from Botswana, where there are wildfires going on all over the country. You could say it's all due to the heat, but what causes the heat? Is it climate change? It all goes in a big circle, doesn't it? Fabio, a final comment from you, sir, about this. There's going to be a lot more debate about what happens to the climate, what shouldn't be done. I know you haven't got a magic wand. I know you won't answer that question. But from your perspective, looking at it as a scientist, coldly, analytically, it is really time for action now, isn't it? This is the last chance saloon.
Well, it's time for action. The fastest, the better.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anna, final comment?
Once we have the CO2 emissions and the methane emissions, something also very important, then we can account it and then we can pay for it.
Indeed. We have to balance the books, don't we? That's one of the most important things. Anna, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to all our guests. So Bella Lack joining us from Brighton, from the Born Free Foundation. Fabio D'Andrea from the Dynamic Meteorology Laboratory at the Ecole Normale Supérieure. Thank you, sir. Anna. Kriti from Paris Dauphine University, thank you. And thanks to Olga Givenet from the La République En Marche party. Thank you. And thanks to you for watching, of course. Stay with us, more to come, live from Paris.